This episode is brought to you by Splash Refresher. Splash Refresher spices up my daily water intake by putting fun and hydration in one. Because as a mom, I already have my hands full. Every Splash Refresher flavor is delicious, bright, flavorful, and zero calories. I don't waste time on flavorless water I don't enjoy. I just drink Splash and I like it.
My favorite flavor is the lemon. It really does taste like lemonade.
My favorite is the mandarin orange flavor.
There's a flavor for everyone to enjoy.
Find Splash Refresher today on Amazon and Instacart or at your local Walmart, Sam's Club, or Kroger. Hello and welcome to Childproof by Betches Media. I'm Tori Phantom.
And I'm Gwenna Laithland. This episode is dedicated to all the parents who could only get their kid to eat vegetables in smoothie form.
And the parents with kids who will willingly try cow tongue because they've never tried it before.
Your kid ate tongue once and you've never recovered.
It licked her back, you know? It's only like one food you can do that with. We recently did a series about kids and food and nutrition and our complicated relationships with all of those things. And we promised that we would also have this conversation with an expert, and we found one, a great one. So with us today is Megan from Feeding Littles.
Hi, guys. Hi, friends. How are you?
Doing wonderful. Before we get started, we do have to do this thing that our listeners love.
They love it so much.
It's everyone. This is their favorite part of the podcast.
Favorite thing.
We do have to start the timer.
All right. Let's do it.
All right. So, Megan, you give us the alphabet soup stats. What are your alphabet soup stats? So when we say that you are a childhood nutritionist, what's all your alphabet soup over there? Because they like hearing it.
Oh, sure. RDN, registered dietitian nutritionist. I have my master's in public health nutrition. I also am a certified intuitive eating counselor. I think that covers most of them. Yes.
Wow. Love it. And
love that.
You created the account called Feeding Littles. Give us the elevator history of Feeding Littles.
Sure. And it actually includes my business partner, Judy, who you might see on there if you pay attention to our content.
Might. So ma'am, we will go to war for Judy.
Yes. I think she's got a very strong following online. So I'm a registered dietitian and Judy is an occupational therapist who specializes in feeding therapy. And we met back in 2014. We were actually connected because of a sweet baby who passed away. She was his feeding therapist in Colorado. And I was friends with his mom in Arizona. And she connected us. And she said, you're both working on helping kids learn to eat a variety of things in different ways. And I think you should talk and get together. And that first talk was 2 hours long and we decided we needed to create a business together. And it's called Feeding Littles because I had a Facebook group called Feeding Littles Group. And that's literally where this all started. And we were one of the first feeding accounts on Instagram. We started selling online courses in 2015 just to share our expertise with people, to give people the information that we say to them in private practice. And they go, why does nobody tell me this? Why have I never learned this before? And it's not, something I could condense down to like one blog post. It takes a little bit of understanding and depth to kind of get it and apply it to your life. So that's why we created it in course form. And that's what we've been doing ever since, is trying to help people feed their kids.
That's amazing. So language is really important. And the words that we use about and around our kids are vital, right? It's something that can be a sort of tricky thing. But one of the things that you say is you almost never refer to, unless you're correcting someone or like redirecting the language, you never call them picky eaters. You call them selective.
Well, and even selective eaters, I kind of got scolded by Judy recently because selective eaters used to be a diagnosis. We've even tried to get reluctant. I think we've settled on reluctant or hesitant because the label is something that's so easy for our kids to live up to. And when we say, well, you're picky, oh my gosh, you're so picky. This is so annoying. Kids internalize that. It's just like, getting on someone's case for being shy or being whatever, trait that you don't find appealing. And oftentimes kids start to live up to that label. So if we tell them they're picky, they'll become more picky.
And because the term picky has such a negative connotation associated with it. I have a kid who eats, eight foods. And I've always just said she's particular. She's particular about what she wants to eat. Mm-hmm. And we don't discipline that. We work on it. Right. So I would say when it comes to selective, particular, not picky eating, what are your absolute no-nos for mealtimes with them? Like the hard line of every kid is different, but this is never going to be a recommendation of what to do.
Oh, I never speak in absolutes. I feel like that's such a tough question.
Yeah.
But I really appreciate it because I think it's so different than how we grew up. And really what I was going to say was, I was interrupting you, Tori. I think we can say picky eating, just not in front of our kids. So I think it's like easy to use that language around other parents because they understand it. And when we're commiserating and we're struggling, like that's, I think it's totally okay. I just think we don't want to have our kids hear us label them as that if we can help it. And if we've already done that and we've already said it, it's okay to just stop and not do it anymore if that's something you choose to do. There's no guilt. There's no shame. There's no like, you didn't ruin your kid. It's just one piece of advice that you might want to take moving forward, or you might not. A question about some absolute no's at the dinner table. I want to just step back really fast and just kind of remind you, anyone listening, that our kids are people too. And if we put ourselves in their shoes, what would it feel like if you went to a meal and people were dictating how many bites you took or what you ate first, or no, you can't have more of that until you eat all of this. And especially if you're really in tune with your body and you know what foods feel good to you or know what your appetite is telling you, I would be highly defensive, highly defensive. Yeah. And it's no wonder our kids are too. So some things that we recommend, you know, avoiding, first and foremost, you know, any sort of like shame, yelling, fighting, that is easy to happen because we get frustrated and it's like, well, I just put all this time into this dinner and you're not even touching it. Cool. And that also makes the environment really negative for a kid and makes them feel really yucky about going to the meal. And it's going to make them even more combative the next time you sit down.
Yeah.
So first and foremost, if you can do anything, focusing on just a positive eating environment is so huge. Mm-hmm. I'm really struggling with this absolute no, guys, because
I know.
I don't speak in absolutes. I don't speak in absolutes.
Here's where we can shift just a little. I learned from you, specifically from you, years ago. I was once a hider of veggies. I would blend up peppers and mushrooms and pour them into the sauce and pretend like no one could taste a difference. We're eating vegetables. I would hide spinach and stuff that was green, cauliflower and stuff that could mask it. I was a big hider of veggies. And then you had made a post several years ago that's like, you're actually forming a level of distrust. Either they're really not going to know what the food tastes like because it's all wonky because you added vegetables not normally in it, or they're going to catch you. And then all of a sudden, they're going to question every molecule of food you're offering them. Is there stuff I don't like in here? I don't like it for a reason. I don't want to eat it. Right. I was once a food hider. Now, do I still put cauliflower rice in my chili? Yes, but I'm straight up. There is cauliflower rice in this chili. You've eaten it like this a thousand times. You don't have a problem with the cauliflower rice here.
Yep. And that's a tough one for parents because they feel so much guilt that their kids aren't eating vegetables. And they're like, I have to do something. And there was this really big movement for a long time about, well, it's so easy to get kids to eat vegetables. You just hide it. You just hide it in their food. So they have no idea.
Just lie to them.
Right. Just lie to them. And I like there's people that are going to be, you can tell I'm a huge empath, right? And I can just sit, I can put myself in the shoes of a parent who's listening to this going, but that's the only way my kids eat vegetables. And now I feel so crappy about myself. Right. That is not the intent of this. What we're trying to share is that it can backfire. And if it's your only strategy and the only thing you're relying on, it's going to be very disappointing when it doesn't work anymore. And I also think that kids need to I'm a firm believer in cooking with vegetables and making vegetables tasty and delicious and using them in recipes. If you pay attention to any of our content, you'll see I serve tons of vegetables to my kids and I love them, but I make them taste good. And I'm shredding up carrots into their meatballs that we all eat together because I think it tastes good. It adds a nice hint of sweetness and texture. But I don't hide it. I ask my kids, hey, come over and shred this for me. This is going in the meatballs, just like you mentioned, Gwenna. You know, they're aware of the green in their smoothie sometimes is spinach. Like they know what made it green. It's more about what's your intent. Are you trying to trick them? Or are you just trying to serve vegetables in creative ways so that they learn to enjoy them differently? Like, we don't all like vegetables, every single vegetable, and we don't like it all prepared the same way. I think our parents' generation hates Brussels sprouts because they ate them steamed.
Yeah. I still haven't made it back to Brussels sprouts because my parents were steaming them as a kid, and I just haven't been able to encounter a Brussels sprout without going, ugh.
But Tori, have you gone to a restaurant that has like really good Brussels sprouts with like the garlic dip and the, like, you know, yummy?
I'm honestly, I'm a chicken tenders person at the restaurant.
Okay.
You know,
Gwen is going to have to.
I'm also picky. So,
yeah, it's okay. It's okay. It's a work in progress. We're all working on it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
See, but that speaks a lot to what's happening when, as parents, we are trying our best to constantly, here, try this new thing. Here, try this new thing. We can go too far. Because Tori is a grown adult who still, like, can't. They know it's a mental hurdle about Brussels sprouts. They know full well they could try them in a new form and like them, but their gut reaction drilled into them from childhood is Brussels sprouts, ew.
Ew, can't do it. Yeah.
Tori, were you forced to eat them?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So this is probably the one big no that is hard for a lot of parents to accept. Force feeding is probably the one thing if you can work on.
Manipulating them into eating it is still forcing them to eat it. Yes, I just need to say that.
Did you know that summer is so close?
I've been trying desperately not to think about it.
And our kids are going to be home from sunup to sundown for several months. I love them so much. I love spending time with them. I have so many exciting things planned. But we're also going to have a lot of downtime. We need things to do for the rainy day that are going to keep them engaged and help them to be creative. And I found the solution, KiwiCo.
Oh, it's raining and gross outside? Cool. Would you like to dig up dinosaurs or build a windmill? Those are the Kiwi kits we have.
KiwiCo encourages kids to get outside, explore, and stay off their screens. Awesome projects from the summer adventure series like the Bottle Rocket Kit, where kids build an actual bottle rocket, help to turn outdoors into a playground of learning and fun. We've made the bottle rocket and it was incredibly fun.
You'll be surprised at how high quality the materials are too. These are real engineering, science, and art projects for children. As a parent, it can be hard to find creative ways to keep your children busy and challenged. KiwiCo does the legwork for you so you can spend quality time tackling projects together.
Build the best summer ever with KiwiCo. Get 20% off on your summer adventure series at KiwiCo.com with promo code ChildproofSummer. That's 20% off your summer adventure at KiwiCo.com. Promo code ChildproofSummer.
Once more, KiwiCo.com, promo code ChildproofSummer.
The weather's getting warmer, so it's time to stow away those jackets and sweaters and break out the shorts and tees. I wanted to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince. Now I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year.
Okay, yes, it's time to put away the sweaters unless you married a polar bear. I definitely married a polar bear, and he keeps this house at a number I don't want to say because it's too low. My saving grace is that I get to wear the softest cotton sweater. It's so cozy and it's bulky and I love it and I get to use it all year round.
Quince sweaters are so good. Quince has amazing items like premium European linen dresses, blouses and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14 karat gold jewelry, and so much more.
The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Quince cuts out the middleman by partnering directly with top factories and passes that savings on to us.
And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/childproof for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/childproof to get free shipping and 365-day returns.
One last time, quince.com/childproof.
Now, I would love your opinion on this with everything that you do. There is a specific type of language I use with my kids who don't want to try something or who are unsure about trying something because I'm all about honesty in the same way that I don't hide vegetables. If I have a food that I want my kid to try and I'm unsure if they'll like it, I will tell them, I don't think you're going to like this or I don't know if you're going to like it, but I think you should try it anyway. Like you could just spit it out if you don't like it. Yeah. And I, like, in my experience with the kids, it's been one of those moments where they're just kind of like, oh, well, you're being honest. Maybe I won't like it. But but sometimes they do. So it like works out great. They kind of almost want to prove me wrong. Like maybe yeah. I do like it.
Reverse psychology.
Right. But so I guess, do you think that that's like an appropriate thing? And also, what are some things that you find helpful to say to kids when you're trying to encourage them to try new things?
Sure. Well, first and foremost, I think you know your kid best. So Tori, like you're asking, do you think that's an appropriate thing to say? I think if it's working for you and it feels good to you and it feels authentic, awesome. That you know what you're doing. You know your kid's best. And I think especially because of what you've been through and because you understand their picky eating probably more than a lot of other people do.
Yeah.
You're approaching it from like, I know that you're probably scared. I know that you are worried about putting this in your mouth. You've had negative experiences with it in the past. The worst thing that can happen is you can not like it and you can spit it out and it's done and it's gone. Yeah. And that I think gives them permission to try it, because sometimes when we're so forceful or pressuring to our kids, I can actually almost tell when I'm around kids who are forced to eat something at home, because the second anything goes on their plate that is not remotely, you know, something that they're willing to try, they completely panic and freak out. And that's not an absolute, obviously. That sometimes kids just cannot tolerate even the sight of something for various reasons. But a lot of times when kids are made to eat a certain amount of bites or a certain portion of something, they become so resistant because they're scared. I mean, think about it. If somebody were forcing you to eat something you really didn't enjoy, it would be a really negative experience for you. And so I think you validating them and explaining to them that you know that that could be scary, but you could spit it out, that gives them an out. So now they're actually willing to try it, because they're like, well, again, the worst thing that could happen is I don't like it and then I just don't have to eat it.
Right.
And I think that's powerful for kids. And to answer your question, you know, what are some tools, and when kids are trying new things, what are some ways in which we can help them through this? You know, emphasizing, I always say, you don't have to eat it if you don't want to. You don't have to eat it if you don't
want
to.
That's so
always
common even on foods that are our favorites and just maybe don't hit that day. Maybe like, yeah, no, I love baked potato bar, but I really don't want to eat baked potato bar today. Okay, mm-hmm. You don't have to eat it. You can just eat the toppings.
Make a baked potato bar now.
That sounds really good.
It sounds so good.
The only time that I enforce a rule is broccoli sprinkles. If broccoli sprinkles are on the table, I do need you to use just a few broccoli sprinkles, because chances are if there's broccoli sprinkles broken out, which is just the fluffy top parts that I've mm-hmm. shaved off of the top of the broccoli, if there's on there, it's because I'm feeling a little guilty that maybe our meal isn't as green as it could be.
That's funny. Yeah. And I think, you know, there's a big element of play in this. And Gwenna, you alluded to the idea that like pressure and manipulation is also forcing them. And it's the play element can be a fine line, because mm-hmm. if our goal is to make them eat, if like the play in the tension of play is to make them eat it in the end right mm-hmm. now, then yes, that can be pressuring and manipulative. The way Judy uses play is more of a way to get them comfortable with that food. The goal is just to see them tolerate it on their plate, interact with them, put it in their hands, bring down the vibe and the pressure of that meal. Because when we play as adults, we also have a little bit more fun and we're less likely to kind of be the sticklers. You know, we suddenly go into kid mode ourselves. Mm-hmm. So when people are like, what do you mean play? I'm not referring to like purposely throwing spaghetti on the wall or like making this giant mess on purpose for the sake of that. What we're referring more to is, oh my gosh, one example we use all the time is my kids will spell out their names in green beans, in long green beans. Those French green beans I literally take them out of the freezer, put them in a pot with a little water, heat them up so they're kind of steamed in there. And then I add butter and salt, and that's our vegetable sometimes for dinner. And they think it's so fun to spell their names. And then they'll say, Mom, which letter do you think I ate? And I'll, you know, pretend to close my eyes, and then they'll eat one. I'll have to guess which one. But it's funny because they're they're so self-motivated to eat it. I didn't make them. I didn't tell them they have to do it. If sometimes they're not eating their, you know, green beans, I'll say, hey, do you want to spell out your name? But if they don't want to, then we don't have to.
Yeah.
What's funny though, is the more they play and interact with the food, the more likely they are to eat it. Like it really does work. If we use it with the right intention, that it's not necessarily a immediate, response right now.
I'm going to tell a story of a time this gamification worked. We tried coleslaw, and I don't say I've got a picky eater. I, in fact, put the emphasis on the other one. I have an adventurous eater. I've got one child who will try everything, anything, doesn't matter, including things that maybe we shouldn't be putting in our mouth. Like, that's not food. Put it, get that back out. I have an adventurous eater. Okay. And then I've got my boy child who is less adventurous. That's how we refer to, he's not a five food feeder, but he's far more selective. He knows what he likes and he's a little more trepidatious to try and experiment with new things. But we have coleslaw. Everybody else was loving the coleslaw and he looked at it. And unfortunately, I had made the coleslaw just a little bit too long ago. So some of that red cabbage had started to bleed. So it was starting to turn the whole thing purple. And so he was like, no, that looks gross. I was like, all right, you know, I see it. It's kind of a disconcerting color for you. You've never seen food this color. And it's weird. I get it. But you know what they are? Purple leaves. Look, they look like snakes. We like purple leaf snakes. And so I just let him put a finger down on his plate and move the snake around. That's all he did. We didn't say a word. And then I'm looking at my other daughter and we're having a conversation and I feel an elbow in my rib cage. And it's my husband who sits next to me at the dinner table and he elbows me. And like, this is the universal parent sign of look, but don't
elbow of you can't make a, don't draw don't, attention to it.
Don't react.
You're eating and a new food. Oh my goodness.
Like, I peripheral vision and he was just playing with the snakes and he was talking to his older sister and a piece of cabbage went into his mouth and I chewed it up. And it didn't say anything. And Jack and I are like, don't react. And then he played with another snake and it wandered to his mouth. And he ate. Don't react. He ate the whole thing of coleslaw. Didn't notice that he didn't like it. Didn't notice that he was eating it.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the meal, because we were super concerned, I was like, all right, are we encouraging mindless eating now? Are we not engaging with the... No, because then he asked, Mom, can I have more purple snakes? But I just want the purple snakes. Sure. So I'm like picking out pits of red cabbage for him. Yeah, buddy, I'll do this for you.
It's so funny to me that you said it looked bad, because that is literally the joke my kids have in our house, is that Mom makes really good food, but it doesn't look good. I'll take it. A win's a win.
Spring has sprung, and that means it's time for spring cleaning. Whether that means stocking up on cleaning supplies or swapping out your winter clothes for new spring clothes, make sure you're using Ibotta and get real cash back with every purchase.
Ibotta is a free app that gives you the most cash back every time you shop on hundreds of items, from groceries to beauty supplies to toys. So you can make sure you're shopping smarter, not harder, no matter what you're purchasing.
The average Ibotta user earns $256 per year. That could cover the cost of a spring wardrobe refresh, new warm weather bedding, or a flight for that summer getaway.
Other apps give you points that don't amount to much. With Ibotta, just add your offers in the app, upload your receipt, and get real cash that you can cash out to your bank account, PayPal, or gift cards.
Join the over 50 million users and earn cash back every time you shop from over 2,700 brands and retailers, including all of your favorite grocery stores, Lowe's, Macy's, Sephora, Best Buy, and more. Right now, Ibotta is offering our listeners $5 just for trying Ibotta by using the code CHILDPROOF when you register.
Just go to the App Store or Google Play Store and download the free Ibotta app to start earning cash back and use code CHILDPROOF. That's Ibotta in the Google Play or App Store and use code CHILDPROOF.
By the time baby number two comes, you feel superhuman. You totally have it all figured out. You got this. But then the reality sets in. It's more than twice the work and can sometimes feel like absolute chaos. It's obviously not always going to go right, but you'll take any opportunity to make it a little easier. The Honest Company has a new line of calming products for the whole family, so your little ones will go down easier and you can have a moment of honest relaxation. The Calm Collection is a line of dreamy and calming lavender products to help make you and your baby's bedtime routine smoother. They have lavender wipes to clean up sticky hands and messes, a Calm lavender bath and body set that's both gentle enough for babies and soothing self-care for moms, lightweight lavender body oil to help wind down before bedtime, and fun purple printed pajamas made with 100% certified organic cotton. The sooner your little ones go to bed, the sooner you are able to relax. For a little while, anyway. Their Calm Lavender collection is made with lavender essential oils that help calm babies before bed, and their super absorbent overnight diapers have up to 12 hours of leak protection. With a focus on sustainability and clean products, The Honest Company works with toxicologists at their in-house lab to create eco-friendly, safe, and effective products you can feel good using. Body products are naturally derived and designed for all skin types, while their diapers are made with plant-based materials that are ultra-soft and super absorbent. Good for your whole family and your environment. Try Honest for yourself. Shop at Target, Amazon, Walmart, and honest.com. All right, so I've got a question for you. How sure. important are the feeding tools, the plates, the cups, the bowls, the utensils, the placemats? Like, there is an entire massive market for these things. And some of them, again, for accessibility, if you've got a kid that you're working with grips on, yes, those are tools that serve a very different purpose. But for general, just eating, just introducing solid foods, just sort of setting expectation of trying new foods.
And I want to add an addition to her question. And what do you think of those plates that kind of gamify the food? Like, I saw one that was like a board game and each mm-hmm. slot had a space for mm. food. And at the end, there's like a treat. So like,
yes,
those things I feel like go together.
Yes, that's a great question. I actually have never been asked it this exact way. And I love getting new questions like this. So there are tools that can be helpful, but no tool is essential.
Okay. I love that answer.
That oh is my a great gosh, answer.
That just made my little heart happy.
There are tools that can make life easier. We love the Num Num utensils for babies. We have our own set of colors because we wanted to offer them in a 3-pack because it's easy to kind of rotate through when you're giving your baby loaded spoons. They hold on to two and then the third one, you know, is the trade up. And they're like, yes, I'll drop this because you know how babies grip onto things like with a death grip, right? So that can be helpful, but that technique can be done with your regular spoon too. The utensils specifically are grip, like they grip onto food wells, but our goal is for kids to use real utensils eventually mm-hmm. and real plates. So you don't have to have this $1 million collection of all the things. Most parents yeah. end up buying them anyway, just because they don't want to break their stuff or whatever. Their kid loves the princess plate that they see at Target, but it's not essential to buy all these things for your kids to eat. We want them to learn to use an open cup and a straw cup. So it doesn't need to be fancy. A lot of times people literally use shot glasses with their babies because mm-hmm. it's an open cup, you know, and you might have it at home.
Small enough. Yeah.
Small enough. It's not going to make a big mess if it goes over.
No. So, you know, I think people get really caught up in needing to have all of these different things. Now, with that being said, are there some tools that are helpful? Yes. It is helpful to have like a placemat for when you're eating out, especially mm-hmm. because if you don't want to put their food directly on the, you know, table. It is helpful to have an open cup and a straw cup. You're going to probably have a million cups at some point. Have you guys noticed yeah. that your cup collection is huge?
We have so many cups.
I don't know where they all come from. I'm not buying them. I swear to God.
I don't remember yeah. what characters used to be on some of them, but nope. there's still a cup. I won't get rid of it.
So many cups. It can be helpful if you have a more reluctant eater. It can be helpful to use things like mini kid tongs, but you might already have something like that. You know, that's something that you could even use yourself. Or sometimes we'll put food in like muffin tins or ice cube trays to make it kind of unique and different. And those things can be helpful, but also are items that you could use in other ways. So you don't necessarily mm-hmm. just have to buy them for that purpose. I'm a big believer in not like filling up your kitchen with a million things you don't need. I have to do that for my job. And I'm like, no, don't do this, people, because it's not ideal. I have an entire cabinet, literally whole cabinet full of lunch boxes because of the lunchbox book that we're writing. So I don't think people need that. Your question about the fun plates. There is a certain plate, like the constructive eating plate. Have you guys seen that brand before?
Yeah. Yes.
That I love. I think it's so fun. I actually want to eat off of it.
For those listeners who have never heard the constructive plate, they've got a different theme, but I'm just going to describe the digger one. It's got mm-hmm. a plate. It's got a little construction scene on the plate. And then the utensils are shaped like little diggers. So you can really use the spoon shaped one to push the food. The little fork has a tractor on it. So it looks very much like you've turned your food into a construction zone and you're moving it around the plate and to your mouth with these cute little diggers and backhoes and dump truck type
yes.
of vibes.
It makes dinner a toy in the best way.
Yes. Yeah. It's fun. And the nice thing is there's no language on the plate that's like, eat this, you know, it's like, it literally just kind of shows you how to use it. And I love the pusher one that you push the food onto the spoon. Yeah. I just think it's fun. It makes eating a little bit more exciting. I don't love anything that promotes you have to eat this to get that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't like anything that is forcing a child to finish a certain amount of food or finish any particular food in order to get a reward, which mm-hmm. is also food, not great. Because what that teaches them is to stop listening to their innate signals. We want kids mm-hmm. to know when they're hungry and when they're full. And I don't know about you, but I don't always finish what's on my plate. Like sometimes right. there's literally a few bites left or a lot of bites left. And I'm listening to what my body says, not what the plate's saying. So same thing with kids. If we're making them eat through all of these foods to get really what they want, they're learning first and foremost that that reward food, that chocolate or whatever you have at the end, is way high value and way special. But also they're learning, I have to push past this discomfort of my body saying I'm full to get something that I really want. I would rather the kid just have the chocolate alongside whatever feels good, or even, you know, maybe after, but like as long as they can listen to what feels good to them.
Right, right.
At our dinner table, we do have boundaries. Boundaries are important even when you're working with selective, picky, particular eaters. So we have boundaries in that, first of all things are served at an equal footing. Everything is put on the plate that is on offer for the plate, unless I am serving something like, I know my one child does not eat fish. If we have fish, I make them a different entree because I don't think that kid's ever going to like fish. That's not a selective thing. My husband also doesn't like fish. It makes sense that this child's never going to like fish. I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. But we present everything. So the roll is on the plate and the mashed potatoes are on the plate and the roast chicken and the vegetables and a piece of chocolate or a little piece of cobbler. Or the only time that doesn't happen is ice cream. And then that's a little different. We almost never serve ice cream with dinner because it's hard to time because no one wants it melty. But then I don't care what order you eat it in. Obviously we're going to eat the cobbler first, obviously, but the boundaries I set around it are, so long as there is extra, and there isn't always extra depending on how the food was prepared, you can have anything extra on the plate, except this is the only bit of dessert that you're getting. And maybe this is the only roll, or maybe this is the only this thing, either because there's not enough to go around for everybody, or that's enough. We don't need 16 bread rolls when we've got perfectly good green beans on the plate. Okay. Like, I know we're going to just top off on those breads. I get it. So you can't have seconds of the cobbler. You can't have seconds of the bread. But I don't care if you didn't touch the chicken and want more green beans. Sure. Here's some more green beans. You only want the mashed potatoes today. Okay. Because I technically cheat and I add mashed cauliflower to my mashed potatoes. It's not hidden. They know it's there. They like pouring it in. But in this case, I feel less like, yes, it's very starchy, but also there's some veggie content in there. Sure. Mm-hmm. More mashed potatoes.
Potatoes are so good. I know. Like, they're so good for you. I feel like they've been demonized somehow.
They have.
But they're so nutritionally dense.
They fill you up and keep you full.
Yeah. See, in our house, I think the kids eat treats typically before dinner, not because it's a planned thing, but because I'm usually eating treats while cooking dinner. And if they see me eating a treat and I'm like, no, you can't have that before dinner, well, then I'm a hypocrite. So if I'm eating an Oreo while cooking dinner, yeah, you can have one too. What are your thoughts with the desserts and treats? Should they be before, with, after? Like, I know not a reward, like that's not... We're not earning it, but do you have specific thoughts and recommendations on how to handle the sweets?
Yes, that's a great question. I think it depends on your kid's age, and I think it depends on the culture of your family. Meaning, how do you guys handle sweets? Are you people that, I mean, a lot of parents don't even eat sweets. A lot of people don't like sweets, or they don't eat them very often, or maybe they only eat them when they go out to dinner, or they're like ice cream people that want to go out for ice cream a few times a week, and that's the only time they eat them. So I don't think there's a one size fits all response. And just between the two of you, obviously the way you guys do sweets is a little different just for you two. Yeah. In my family, when they were younger, we would do desserts a few times a week at least. And then they would have it, you know, throughout the day. They went to preschool, you know, you'd always get the random class party or the people giving them a sucker places. I was never strict about any of that. But I wouldn't give them necessarily dessert every day when they didn't know any different. And now that my kids are 8 and 11 and they're surrounded by sweets and sugary things all the time. And so to normalize it and to not make it this big deal, we just serve it every day after dinner. And the reason we do it after dinner, even though I love serving it with dinner, is because I personally like eating it after dinner and my kids usually like some sort of ice cream thing. So it doesn't make sense to me. Yeah. So we do a lot of those like Trader Joe's mini ice cream cones, or like the the little mini mochis, or the chocolate covered bonbon things from Trader Joe's. They love all of those things, and it's just not practical. And ironically, they're starting to kind of take on the taste of me. They like a sweet ending to the dinner. They like to finish it off with a sweet. Yeah. So Tori, you're starting with a sweet and that might be what you like to do. And my kids like to end with a sweet. So even if I serve it with dinner, they usually don't eat it first because they want to end on that sweet. Mm-hmm. The reason serving it with a meal can be powerful is because you're taking away the mystique of it and you're making it just like any other food. Yeah. You know, some people like to, it's tricky, right? Sometimes, you know, we say like for a kid that really is obsessed about sweets, liberalize it. See what happens if you give them more and, you know, allow them to eat their fill of that. And that might mean that they're getting, feeling not so great and kind of get maybe even sick. Overeating too many sweets or too much candy or cookies or whatever it is. But that's actually a really good practical lesson.
That actually worked for one of my children who beds. One of my kiddos lives by, I will listen to your advice and ignore it. And then when it turns out you're right, I will say, wow, mom, you were right about that. And mm-hmm. she was convinced that if she just ate as much ice cream as she wanted, that it would be fine. And I told her, I said, you're going to get a tummy ache. And she said, I don't think I will. I said, I think you will. And, you know, we were having a fine day. Everything was good. And I said, you know what? Sure, you can have another scoop. And she got halfway through and went, yeah, I think you were right. And mm-hmm. that was the day she immediately just started regulating and is like, I think this is enough for me. It was like that moment it clicked for her of that intuitively eating the ice cream. Okay, right. Yeah, maybe I am done.
Well, think about how powerful that is compared to what we were taught growing up.
Yeah.
I know you guys are 90s babies, babies of one of the most problematic decades when it comes to body image and messaging.
I think that was half of one of our first nutrition episodes was just 90s.
Mm-hmm. It's a problem. And I was brought to Weight Watcher meetings, mm-hmm. not for me, but for my mom. But all I could see was her disappointment when she didn't get the ribbon. Mm-hmm. If she didn't lose the right amount of weight or the stars or the weird things, they had all these little trinkets and tokens there for like, it was, and I internalized very quickly, like, oh, my weight is a really big deal. And this is how I control it. And this is where my value lies, even though my mom desperately wanted to shield me from that. But she was also a victim of diet culture herself. Mm-hmm. So back to kind of this story that you have, Tori, with your daughter, and she, you know, doesn't feel good eating this food. How different is that messaging than what we were taught? You can't eat that. You're going to get fat.
Right. Yeah. Or maybe you shouldn't eat that much. I don't think your body would like it very much. Right. I think your tummy would hurt.
And that's the thing too, I think, is that this tactic would not have worked for my other children because even in your own family system, you have to handle every kid for who they are and where they're at.
Right.
And the one kid, she listens to me, but she wants to experience it. She wants to see what that is. And thankfully, the more that she's learned I'm right, she does listen more now when I just say things.
It sounds like you have a world changer over there. You have somebody that's going to do big things. Big things. That's awesome.
Hydrating doesn't have to be boring. Splash Refresher spices it up by putting fun and hydration in one. Because as a mom, I already have my hands full. Splash Refreshers are delicious, bright, flavorful, and available in 5 craveable flavors. It has 0 sugar, 0 calories, and a splash of sweetness for a hydrating and delicious beverage you'll come back to again and again.
My favorite flavor is the lemon. It really does taste like lemonade, so I'm getting hydrated, and it just feels like I'm drinking lemonade.
Splash Refresher perfectly blends refreshing fruit flavors with just a little bit of sweetness, all with 0 sugar and 0 calories.
Available in 5 craveable flavors, wild berry, acai grape, pineapple mango, lemon, and mandarin orange, Splash Refresher is there to satisfy your need for hydration with a little flavor. There's a flavor for everyone to enjoy.
They are delicious, bright, flavorful, and hydrating, and 0 calories. So you can have fun flavored water without any guilt. Consider your hydrated self thriving.
Find Splash Refresher today on Amazon and Instacart or at your local Walmart, Sam's Club, or Kroger.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So we've got just a few more minutes till the end of the episode, but I wanted to briefly touch on what is probably a topic that needs more attention than we can give it, but let's talk about food language and the neutrality of food. So in our house, so I am a fat human being who developed an eating disorder because of diet culture. I developed a binge eating disorder, and it's still something that I am working with and for and against and because of a lot. So that's my internal struggle. But then I'm looking at my kids and going, I cannot pass this shit on to them. Like, how do I do that when I am still struggling to listen to my own body, to have a good relationship with the food that I put in it? So I really early decided not to use good food, bad food, because that was so much of my issue is it's a good food. It's a bad food. Well, I'm eating a bad food. I'm eating chocolate cake and this is bad. So that makes me a bad person. But I can't stop eating the chocolate cake, so I must be a terrible person. So we use brain foods and body foods. There are foods that really benefit our body because they've got lots of protein and vitamins and minerals and things that help us grow strong or smart or see really good or have healthy teeth. Like, there's foods that are good for our body and there are foods that are good for our brain in that it makes us really happy to eat it. It makes us feel comfortable. It gives us good mouth feels. It tastes really yummy. It makes our brain happy to eat these foods. The best foods are brain and body foods in that our body really likes it, like mashed sweet potatoes. My family will down some mashed sweet potatoes. That's a superfood with tons of really good nutrition and good things for our body. And it makes our brains really happy to eat this. So it's a good brain and body food. So our goal is to get as many good brain and body foods as we possibly can. And it's building off of what I hope is eat what you want, add what you need. So yeah. I have aimed for this sort of neutral language around food. What are some ways that you've used or heard other families use to keep food at a neutral position, but still, look, we know that sweet potatoes are always going to be better for us. It's a good food when compared to chocolate cake. There's nothing wrong with chocolate cake, but right. we can't live off that. That's our bodies right. are not designed to live off only chocolate cake. We wish it was, but it's not.
Right. I love that. And I actually, I laugh because I have my 8-year-old. Sometimes I'll say, let's choose something that's going to give us longer energy. And she goes, but mommy, ice cream has calcium. That's good for our bones. And I'm like, oh, you're using,
they use
using
it
my tactics against me. Yes. Okay. Okay. I think I might have a similar situation going on with my 8-year-old that you might have going on, Tori, with your child. It's a, you know, I have to learn it for myself. Dewey selfie child. I think that's a great question because I think it changes as kids get older and the way I would have answered this when they were younger might be different than now. I think that connecting to how it makes you feel is so powerful. And that's, again, that's talking about what was missing when we were growing up. Nobody ever asked, are you full? Are you hungry? Like, are
you
satisfied?
Please don't eat all the food off of your plate. Eat until right. you're full. Please.
Yes. Right.
Yes. Good job listening to your body. That's the praise you get.
Nobody said that. I mean, it's so weird if you think about it, right? We use terms like, you know, what is your tummy telling us? Let's do a check-in with your body. How much more food do you think you need? Even this morning, I was making egg in a hole, which people call egg in a basket. And it's got like apparently 50 different names. It's when you cook an egg inside some like buttered bread on the stove. And I literally said to both of my kids, how many do you think you want? That's not something that I don't think we were ever asked.
Yes. Yes.
And it's not because I'm trying to make them decide, like dictate how much they're going to eat, but they're starting to know their bodies enough and know their hunger cues enough that they can say, oh, I think I can only handle one this morning. I think I only want one, or I'm starving. Please make me two or three. And, you know, it's funny how that just wasn't a thing for us. So language, I think I like your brain foods, your body foods. I think that's great. I think understanding that satisfaction and taste and enjoyment are a thing that are valid to our physical and mental health.
They're so important.
So important. And that's, I think, the conversation that's missing in even a lot of the nutrition and kid discussions online. It's like, they must eat vegetables. They must eat these things. It's like, but we still have to enjoy eating.
Yeah, we don't want it to be a stressful experience.
No. And we want to like how it tastes. And not everyone likes every food. There's probably foods that you guys don't enjoy. And our kids are going to be the same way. Plenty. Yeah, Tori, plenty. So I feel like using neutral language, you know, for us, we'll say things like, let's get something a little bit more filling. Let's get something that has a little bit more nutrition so that we have longer energy. Sports can be really helpful because they can immediately teach your child how important fueling is. My 11-year-old is in club volleyball. It's her second year. She's a very young player on the team. She has 3-hour practices, guys. Three hour practices. And it is grueling. And her, you know, I had to kind of talk with her coach, whom I adore, and be like, I think they all probably need a snack break in there because she's coming home.
You need to have like a nutritionist on every kid sports team, honestly.
Yeah. And I just think a lot of them were kind of just fading and not saying anything because even though kids are learning to listen to their bodies, they still struggle. Like they still don't realize when they hit that hangry sometimes.
And they don't know how to communicate that.
They don't. They're like, I'm acting out.
Look at the entire millennial generation. We are all chronically dehydrated because we were given the 1-2-3s at the water fountain. As children, water was deprioritized to such an extent that as adults, we're like, I know I should drink water.
Water?
Somebody's going to be yelling over my shoulder. So I think, you know, the language, and I sometimes I feel like with language, people get so overwhelmed because they're like, well, I'm already messing it up. I'm just not going to do it anymore. I'm just not going to try. Guys, this is not a perfect... Guys, I keep using guys, people, humans, this is not a perfect system. I'm not perfect about this either. Sometimes I say things and I'm like, that wasn't ideal. Let's use different words next time. I think every parent is going to mess up, if you will, have to correct sometimes and have to apologize sometimes if they use language that didn't feel right after the fact. The point is, if your intent is to help connect them to their body, connect them to what feels good, help them learn about consequence of, okay, I only had a, you know, regular bagel with cream cheese before practice. That was not filling enough for practice. I had to get her the Dave's Killer Bread bagel, the protein bagel, and also add a smoothie to that. That sustains her longer. That is such a powerful lesson to learn. She's now learning, oh, I feel fueled when I eat more and I have protein.
And that's such an amazing thing. We never had that as kids of like, you should eat more.
The stupid 100-calorie pack cookies.
Oh my gosh.
God, I hate those things.
The sugar-free, fat-free 100-calorie packs. Yeah. Can you imagine that though? Like the empowerment that we're giving the kids when we say, let's figure out how to make sure that you are staying full for longer. How do we make sure that you are feeling good throughout your day until the next mealtime?
Wait. You mean we can look at our children and acknowledge that as people, they have needs and we can help them meet those needs?
It's so crazy.
Groundbreaking.
My kids, they get free breakfast at school and we check that menu every morning. And again, my selective eater, she'll look at the menu and she'll say, I don't like anything they're serving. Can you make me some eggs today? Like she knows. We check in.
She knows.
I can absolutely make you some scrambled eggs real quick before we go out the door. Yep. Because I want to make sure she's full and fed.
Well, and making sure you get enough food is a safety issue, right? It feels, you feel safe when you know you have enough to eat. And obviously not every kid has that privilege. And so I just feel like just talking about it, if you're thinking about this as a parent, if you're even considering this, you're probably really doing a good job with it.
You're doing great.
Yeah. Like it's the fact that you even worry about the language you use around food means you're already working on it. You're doing it. That's
bad.
Great.
Parents never wonder if they're doing a good job.
No,
good parents never stop questioning if they're doing a bad one.
Yep, 100%.
And that's our timer. That was a fantastic place to end that. Good job.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here,
amazing.
Megan.
I loved that episode so much.
Me too.
I feel like we could go on forever. What's so nice about you both is that you have such insight and awareness and education yourselves that you can add so much depth to the conversation, which I don't always get when I'm interviewed.
Thank you so much.
Because I just feel like a lot of people don't know anything about this and they don't have practical use in their own lives. So I think that's super valuable for your listeners. If there's ever an opportunity for me to come back, I would love it. I know that this is a conversation that people like to have.
I think because there are so many different ways to continue having this conversation. I mean, this will be like our third episode about this topic, and every one of them has been new things and new additions. And I think it's great. Thanks so much for listening to Childproof. You can find Feeding Littles on TikTok and Instagram as @FeedingLittles. And of course, I'm Tori Phantom and Gwenna is Mama Cusses.
Tune in every Wednesday, everywhere you listen to your favorite podcast. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode and leave us a rating. They super duper help.
And remember, Gwenna, TikTok sensation, wrote a book. You should purchase that now or purchase it to listen to it. You can hear her voice even more.
The book is on shelves now. You can walk into your favorite bookstore and buy it. If they don't have it, you should politely ask them. Don't be mean just because they don't carry my book. Like, love your booksellers. They're important.
Email us, childproof@betches.com. Let us know what you do to help your particular eater. And also, let us know what you think of Gwenna's book.
And remember, sometimes our kids are assholes.
And sometimes it's us.
Childproof is produced by Rebecca Sals-McCow and Sean Kilby. Editing by Shannon Sassone. Social media by Lauren Salome. Guest booking by Ali Friedlander. Be sure to follow us at Betches Moms on Instagram and send us your email at childproof@betches.com.
Thank you to our sponsor, Splash Refresher. Meet the water beverage that loves self-care as much as you. Just because you have to hydrate doesn't mean it has to be tasteless. Splash Refresher makes hydration deliciously easy, perfectly blending refreshing fruit flavors with just a little bit of sweetness. All with zero sugar and zero calories.
Available in 5 craveable flavors, there's a flavor for everyone to enjoy. My favorite flavor is the lemon.
The mandarin orange is my favorite flavor. Consider your hydrated self thriving. Find Splash Refresher today on Amazon and Instacart or at your local Walmart, Sam's Club, or Kroger.
Betches.